You're listening to Princeton Lacks Cash, the official podcast of the six-time NCAA national champion Princeton men's lacrosse program. Now here's your host, Jerry Price.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Princeton Lacks Cast. This is actually episode 8 already. I don't think too many seasons fly by faster than the lacrosse season. Jerry Price here with Matt Matalon, the head coach of the Tigers. And before we talk about the last couple of games for Princeton and look ahead to the end of the regular season, what did you think of the performance of your three academic athletic fellows from last week?
I thought it was great. It was awesome to hear them on there. I think they were a little uptight. I think you needed to loosen them up a little bit. But it was fun. I mean, hearing those guys talk, and they're such a big part of our program. And, you know, it's so nice to have that perspective around our guys on a day-to-day basis that, you know, we're fortunate to have them on our team.
I mean, I think one of the great things about those guys is that they do have three really different perspectives on the sport of lacrosse. You have someone who's from a huge lacrosse family. You have someone who never really saw lacrosse. And you have somebody who played lacrosse one season in the 1950s but has all this historical, you know, context to everything that he does. And I think it's I think they interact with the players really well, and I think that they're a real benefit.
I think it's great. I mean, it's true. They all interact with our guys a little differently, and they definitely have a little different view on the game. But the amount of support those guys show our team and the dedication and the commitment, it's really incredible.
So let's talk a little bit about the last two games. We haven't talked to you in 2 weeks, so we haven't talked to you. We didn't talk to you for three games, but we'll just focus on the more recent games. And one of them that you probably want to forget as soon as possible is the Lehigh game from Tuesday night. A little bit of a disappointment, 15-10 loss to the Mountain Hawks. I mean, watching the game, I mean, the first half was the whole story. Lehigh got out to that huge lead, but you run into that every now and then during the course of a long season. It's just, it's unfortunate that when it does happen.
Yeah, it was a tough go. We're disappointed. You know, we're not happy with the performance. We came out flat. You can't give anyone, you know, you can't put yourself in a hole like that. You can't give anyone in the Division I lacrosse landscape, you know, a 9-1 lead and expect that you can come back. I think it was too little too late for us by the end. But again, like, I came out flat, not sharp. You know, we're watching the tape this morning and kind of figuring out how we can continue to move forward, but and not a great performance.
And well, let's go back to Saturday at Stony Brook, which was a game which neither team ever led by more than two. And Stony Brook is tough to play out there, and they're a good team. And that was a game I thought Princeton sort of gutted out and made a lot of big plays when they needed to be made, got some stops when they needed to get some stops. And also might not have been the best performance that your team ever had, but it was a performance that you ended up with a win because you did execute when you needed it most.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the game, as a coaching staff, we were happy. I mean, you said it. It was a gutty performance. And those are games that good teams win. You know, they figure out how, when they're not playing their best, to still be able to get it done. And you know what? Unfortunately for us, it was a slow week. You know, again, we had a slow start, came out flat against Stony Brook, and it didn't end up biting us. This one, unfortunately, did. So, you know, we're going to learn. We're going to regroup. We'll make sure we come out firing on all cylinders. But Stony Brook, again, they did an outstanding job in terms of game management, controlling the pace of the game. Statistically, when faceoffs kind of evened out, they just do a good job in terms of ball control, keeping our offense off the field. And, you know, it was the first time in a while where you really have to figure out as an offensive player, you know, with our top six, top eight, top 10 guys, where they really have to figure out how to manage the game from our end and limit some mistakes and capitalize on opportunities. So I think our guys did a good job. And again, gutty win is spot on. We had to stack a few defensive stops on top of one another to kind of get us the lead. And then, you know, when we had the lead, when it was up to, you know, we've got to limit some of the mistakes there to be able to close it out in a cleaner way. But really proud of the guys for that. You know, we were happy. And then coming into a short week, you know, we had a day off, one day of preparation for Lehigh for a midweek game. You know, Coach Cassis, they came in, good game plan, zone, some 10-man ride, good ball control offense. So, you know, we put ourselves in a little bit of a hole there.
Looking at Lehigh's statistics for the year versus their performance on the field yesterday, it's the first time I saw them play all year, and I didn't think I was watching the team that whose statistics we had looked at and who's, you know, was had struggled against Loyola. I think you ran into a team that just played really well in that given night. And, you know, maybe that sparks them. They have a big game coming up this weekend too, and they're trying to get into the Patriot League tournament and trying to get home field. But, you know, that happens. You know, sometimes teams run into you when you're playing your best, and sometimes you run into other teams when they're playing their best.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, you know, we preach to our guys all the time. You know, any given day, any team can win, and, you know, they came out, put on a great performance. They did a heck of a job, and they got us yesterday. I think that, you know, we're a program that we've done a good job learning from both wins and losses. At times, it seems a little easier to learn from a loss, but, you know, this one stings a little bit, you know, but I think we'll take a we're all right with a little late season wake-up call as long as we can handle our business moving forward.
Do you, as a coach or a coaching staff, have a sense going into a game, good or bad, yeah, I don't feel it this game, or yeah, we're really on right now? Is there something, some indicator of that?
You know, no. I'd like to think there is. I mean, we, you know, we kind of, you know, our bottom line is production and preparation, and we felt like we were a prepared group, even on one day. Going in terms of our offense, our defense, you know, systematically. But, you know, you just it's a funny group when you're coaching 18 to 22-year-old guys. You know, you think even, you know, we can come out, you know, have a sloppy warm-up and then, you know, hang 17, you know, on a John Hopkins team, or, you know, come out, start slow, and then do well against Penn. And then, you know, at times we have great warm-ups and, you know, we end up not having one of our better performances. So, no, I don't think necessarily, you know, the vibe our guys give off in a pregame, you know, kind of tips our hat either way. But as a coaching staff, you're always looking to find consistency.
What do you think when you look around at the landscape this year of how many teams have been ranked number one in the country and not been able to stay there? You know, as soon as they get there, somebody knocks them off. And, you know, Syracuse currently the number one team in the country, and Syracuse clearly a very good team. But when you look at when you look across all of Division One, I don't think there is that one team that you say that's the team that nobody can beat. I mean, honestly, if you ask me, is there one team out there that I think from this point forward could run the table, I would say Maryland, but maybe nobody other than that. And, you know, where does that, what does that say about the game?
That's great. I mean, you know, the parity amongst lacrosse in the top 20, I mean, you know, it's a dogfight. I think that, you know, you're, in terms of your Maryland, I think that, you know, you kind of fall back on the fact that they've been to, you know, many Final Fours over the last 5-6 years. And that championship experience is going to help them down the road. I mean, it allows your guys to understand what it truly takes to make it to Final Four weekend. So, you know, good bet there.
No, but honestly, I mean, I think if I said to you right now, you're like, give me four teams that are going to be in the Final Four, like leave the Ivy League completely out of it. But like, give me four teams you think will be in the Final Four. You know, most years at this stage of the season, you could probably come up with four very good guesses. But right now you have...
I think there's about eight teams. Yeah. I think it could shake out. No, it really is. I mean, it's, you know, the top end of it, and a lot of it's going to shake out over these next couple weeks in conference play. So we're spot on.
But I think that there's something a little bit different about this season in that that's not usually the case. And, you know, with all the teams that have been number one, with the rise of the Big Ten as a conference, you know, where is that taking the sport? I mean, is this... in somehow, is this a coincidence that it's just like this for 1 year, or has the sport reached a stage where there isn't as much difference between the top five teams and the next 10 or 15 teams, or what, you know, what do you think it is?
Sure. I think that, you know, it goes back to the recruiting. It goes back to the development of these young players. I think that, you know, they're in this day and age, there are just so many more talented lacrosse players than it was when we were growing up. So I think more teams with the leverage of scholarship money or the leverage of an academic institution in terms of the Ivy League are able to really track down the top players. And I think that because there are more of them, more teams are able to compete at the highest level. I think everyone's doing a great job.
So let's look a little bit beyond just the loss to Lehigh and the win over Stony Brook. Let's talk a little bit about some of the guys on the team. And, you know, again, we could do this every day, every week, but let's talk about Sowers, because in that game last night, he broke Kevin Lowe's record for points in a season by a freshman, and you know, he still has a minimum of 3 regular season games to add to that. He has 59 points now for the season. The Ivy League record for a freshman is 67 by Rob Pinnell, and Sowers is in second place, and he has a fairly legitimate shot at the records for goals, assists, and points. You know, you don't want to get too ahead of yourself on individual accomplishments in the middle of a team season, but... you know, I congratulated him after the game against Stony Brook because he had tied Lowe's record, and he said, "Thanks for what?" You know, like I mean, they kind of want guys
that's
to
great.
Be like that.
Yeah. Yeah, you hope you get it like that.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it does say a lot about the impact he's had to now be like putting his name actually in the record book for things.
He's a really humble kid. He's really impressive. We love the young guy. He's great. I mean, when it comes down to it, I mean, for him to be able to, you know, put his name in the record books there and do something that hopefully no one's ever done and break some records, I mean, sure, it makes us happy.
But he's also the focus of the other team. When the other team sits down to prepare for Princeton, even though he's a freshman, the first thing they're saying is, okay, what do we do about Michael Sowers?
And he's a dynamic player. I mean, he can feed it, he can shoot it, he can dodge, you know, and we're using him in all different parts of the field. So, we're thrilled.
So you've been the head coach for 16 games. Prior to that, Gavin McBride, I believe, had not had a three-goal game. But since you've been the head coach, in 16 games, 13 times he's had at least three goals. Did you decide to use him differently at the end of last year through this year, or was that just his development as a player? I mean, that's an incredible run, 13 times in 16 games, three or more goals. He had a streak of four straight games of five goals that ended last night when he only had three goals.
Yeah, it's incredible. No, I'm not taking credit for Gav. He's you know, we've labeled him Mr. Consistent. We'll say it over and over again, but he puts himself in the right spots.
Like, and Mr. Consistent scores one goal, two goals, two goals, one goal. What he's done is unprecedented.
Like a superstar consistent. Yeah, he's awesome. We, you know, again, he's doing it within the offense, but he's just really opportunistic. He trains. So when he gets his opportunity, he capitalizes. But no, his production, I think a little bit is standing next to number 22. I think a little bit standing, you know, on the same attack line as 25. I think that a lot of the complimentary players just have helped certain guys step up. But no, what Gavin does is, I mean, no one could have predicted it except the guys in our locker room. You watch how the kid works every day, and it's just not surprising to us. We're thrilled, and I think it's outstanding what he's been doing, but we're not surprised.
So he's moving up the all-time scoring list at Princeton. He's going to get to, you know, he could get close to the top 10 before he's done, and that's remarkable because he had no goals or assists as a freshman. Looking around at the rest of the team, yeah, I see this a lot, but is there a guy that sort of, you know, stood out last couple of games, maybe a little more than normal, or you know, maybe Adam Hardy for what he did against Lehigh?
Yeah, he did a good job coming off the bench. You know, we needed to make a change and try to get us a spark and put in a big-time shooter and try to get him to step in the right spots, and he capitalized. But I think guys, you know, a guy like Riley Thompson, you know, he doesn't get a ton of recognition yet. He's arguably our smartest lacrosse player on the team. You know, he's just his ability to think the game, his ability to create space, his ability to manipulate space and open up other players. He's really impressive. I think Riley, you know, he's kind of that cog in the wheel that just keeps us going and keeps it really consistent.
You talk about Riley, and again, last year, 13 goals, 13 assists. This year, he's bettered both of those numbers already, and you know, maybe it's like 70-something percent of the season. The thing that really impresses me about Riley Thompson isn't that he's just – you know, if he was the kind of guy who was just had a great knack for like getting lost underneath somebody, they lose track of him in the middle and he just had like a great quick stick finish, that's what you would expect for somebody his size. But what really impresses me about him is he's a physical player. I mean, he's small, but he's physical.
He is. I mean, his low level of gravity, and he's got a good base. He does a good job. He's got outstanding body control. His vision's really special. You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Dawson McKenzie, who stepped in to fill the void of Austin Sims recently. And he's kind of stepped up, you know, stepped into that role, into his spot, been able to capitalize on some shots and make some really nice plays.
What is it about the three Canadians and then being at Culver Military Academy? Like, what's the pipeline there, the connection?
It's just, it started with Chris Bates and his relationship with, you know, Coach Posner out there. And, you know, Mitch Henderson, also our basketball coach, there's a Culver connection there. And I think that, you know, just recruiting those guys and you know, our success and love for Zach Currier and his emotion, and then, you know, just to continue to that pipeline. We were so impressed with his ability to come in and be a college-ready lacrosse player, that keeping that pipeline open with, you know, Dawson and Riley, or Riley than Dawson, it's just been really impressive. They do an incredible job out there preparing those guys to play Division I college lacrosse. If you look across the landscape, there are a lot of Culver grads making an impact on Division I teams. So those guys just came in ready. They understand it. They played big-time box lacrosse. whether it's junior A, junior B, senior A. So, you know, they're just in the competitive landscape, and their ability that, you know, no stage is ever too big for them, and to handle the pressure is what makes those guys impressive. You know, we're going to keep going back to that well.
So apologies to Gavin McBride, who actually had a 3-goal game and even a 4-goal game prior to the start of this run. He had 4 goals against Lehigh in the game at Lehigh a couple of years ago. But, so we apologize to Gavin for that one. So that's the last of the midweek games, 4 midweek games. Is that something that you liked?
You know, it's we didn't have much flexibility with our schedule coming into this year. You're normally a year or two out in terms of how you schedule games. You know, we believe as a coaching staff that we want our guys to get as many opportunities to play as possible, to play as a group, to play alongside their brothers and teammates, to score as many points, to make as many stops. We just want to play games. Now, the midweek games are tough here. Are we going to shift it around? Sure, we're going to look to shift some things around. I mean, we don't love playing midweek games during IV play, but it was an opportunity to play a great opponent that, you know, geographically makes sense.
Yeah, the problem, you know, I think it's good to play the maximum number of games you could play, and I also think that it's good to play games against teams that are close enough and competitive enough where you can, you know, it's an hour drive to Lehigh or it's a half-hour drive to Rutgers. But the thing about it is, like, it was a beautiful night. You finally have, like, you know, perfect weather to play in, but it's so late in the season, you know, you don't want to have to play those games on Tuesday nights in February and March, but you're almost forced to.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're gonna address it as a coaching staff and see. You know, it's a lot of teams that play games early and play the Tuesday, Saturday, just to kind of start up the season. You know, you may drop an early game trying to kind of figure yourself out on short preparation. And, you know, given that we're starting Feb 1, you know, your preseason's even a little more condensed. So I think that, you know, we're going to evaluate as a staff and see what makes the most sense for our program and RPI and everything. But again, you know, I'd like to think, win or lose, we'd be thinking about this.
So 3 games left in the regular season. All 3 of them are Ivy League games. It's at Dartmouth Saturday. That's a noon start, by the way, not a 1 o'clock start. So it's a noon start at Dartmouth. Then home against Harvard and then at Cornell to end the regular season. That takes you to the end of April. To play into May would be the Ivy League tournament. That's goal number one. Princeton 2-1 in the Ivy League. Cannot clinch a spot mathematically in the Ivy League tournament with a win this weekend, no matter what else happened. But, you know, a win over Dartmouth would really start to position the team well. It would take a lot of fluky things not to be in the Ivy League tournament at that point. You know, the wins over Penn and Brown have put you in a position to get back into that Ivy League tournament. You know, what's your mindset now? It's 3 weeks. It's going to go by in the blink of an eye, and a lot of things are going to be decided in that time.
Sure. Real quick, we are also a 3 o'clock start at Cornell.
Cornell, yeah.
So just want to make that schedule adjustment as well. Spot on. I mean, 3 games left. You know, all conference games, most important games of the year is the next one. But so we're getting ready to head up, prepare today, take care of Dartmouth, get up there, handle our business in terms of how we prepare offensively, defensively, and then hope we put a good performance on the field. So,
Dartmouth, though, I mean, you know, you look at Dartmouth, you look at their record, and you think to yourself, okay, this is the easy one, and then you have the two hard ones after that. But Dartmouth is never easy at Dartmouth. Those games are never easy.
No, we don't look at it, not for 1 minute, is this going to be an easy one. This is a conference game with everything on the line.
Plus,
this turns into playoff lacrosse for us.
Plus, I mean, it's never easy to play it up there. And two, they have some confidence now. They had a good win over UMass Lowell on Tuesday. And, you know, their goalie's pretty good.
Yeah, they've done a good job. They're a program that's finding their groove right now. We're expecting a good game.
That's Princeton and Dartmouth. It's a 1 o'clock. It's a noon start on Saturday. And then as you look across at the Ivy League itself and the Ivy League race and where it stands right now, I think that I'm positive of this. If Yale beats Brown on Saturday, they'll clinch home field for the Ivy League tournament. But still, I think that, you know, you get to the second half of the Ivy League season and you think to yourself, well, who's going to definitely be the team that comes out of it? And again, like the rest of college lacrosse, there isn't that team. I mean, on any given day, a lot of these teams can beat anybody. And if you thought, like, you know, maybe we're writing off Cornell for the year, they seem to have righted their ship, and their freshmen are playing really well, and they're starting to look like a team that you would expect from Cornell. And, you know, Harvard has so many good players, and course, Yale is playing so well, and Brown could put up goals with anybody, and Penn has a lot of talent, and they still have time to turn their season around. So just like you say, well, who's the Final Four nationally? If I said to you, tell me with 3 weeks to go, you couldn't even tell me who you think the four teams are going to be.
No, you're spot on. I mean, we're handling ourselves one game at a time. We'll control our fate that way.
So this has been the eighth Princeton LaxCast. We appreciate Coach Madelon being with us again, and wish you luck at Dartmouth on Saturday.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Tiger Faithful.
So it's Princeton-Dartmouth. That's Saturday at noon, and then we will be back next Thursday to talk about that game and then look ahead to the final home game of the year, which will be Harvard on April 22nd. A lot of alumni events around that game, a lot of teams that are going to be come back and be recognized for accomplishments on their major anniversaries of those accomplishments. So it should be a fun game, and hopefully the weather will be good, and we'll be back next week to talk about some of those events. In the meantime, we appreciate you being with us and for your support of Princeton men's lacrosse. Jerry Price, for Matt Madelon, thank you for listening.